You're listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Happy Friday. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. And today I wanted to talk about the silencing of the right. I wrote a piece at CaffeinatedThoughts.com yesterday about the firing of Kevin Williamson at The Atlantic. Kevin was a well-known, prolific writer at the National Review for many years. He's a writer that I'm very familiar with. He and I have actually bantered back and forth on Twitter before. But he was fired because of a podcast that he had done where it seemed like he was advocating for the hanging of women who've committed abortion. We're going to play that podcast here in a little bit, an excerpt of that podcast, so you get the full context. But first, I wanted to read basically what Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic, had to say about their decision. He said last week, this is from an internal staff email, "Last week I wrote to you about our decision to hire Kevin Williamson. In that note, I mentioned my belief that Kevin would represent an important addition to our roster of ideas columnists, and I addressed the controversy surrounding some of his past tweeting and writing. I expressed my belief that no one's life work should be judged by an intemperate tweet, and that such an episode should not necessarily stop someone from having a fruitful career at The Atlantic. Late yesterday afternoon, information came to our attention that caused us to reconsider this relationship. Specifically, the subject of one of Kevin's most controversial tweets was also a centerpiece of a podcast discussion in which Kevin explained his views on the subject of the death penalty and abortion. The language he used in this podcast and in my conversations with him in recent days made it clear that the original tweet did, in fact, represent his carefully considered views. The tweet was not merely an impulsive, decontextualized, heat-of-the-moment post, as Kevin explained it. Furthermore, the language used in the podcast was callous and violent. This runs contrary to The Atlantic's tradition of respectful, well-reasoned debate and to the values of our workplace. Kevin is a gifted writer, and he has been nothing but professional in all of our interactions, but I've come to the conclusion that The Atlantic is not the best fit for his talents, so we are parting ways. We remain committed to grappling with complex moral issues in our journalism. Some of our colleagues are pro-life and some are pro-choice. We have pro-death penalty and anti-death penalty writers. We have liberals and conservatives. We obviously understood that Kevin himself is pro-life when we asked him to write for us. This is not about Kevin's views on abortion. We are striving here to be a big tent journalism organization at the time of national fracturing. We will continue to build a newsroom that is, as The Atlantic's founding manifesto states, of no party or clique. We are also an organization that values the spirit of generosity and collegiality, and we must strive to uphold that standard as well." So, anyway, they hired Kevin Williamson for his talent, and they ended up firing him for his views, and obviously they are free to do that. Before we go further on in this conversation, I want to share some words from our sponsors.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a life insurance plan that makes sense for you, call my friend Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. That's Travis Risvold with Modern Woodman. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
We are back again. This is Shane Vanderhart, and we're talking about Kevin Williamson's firing at The Atlantic and his view that abortion, as he considers it murder, should be punished to the fullest extent of the law, which would include the death penalty. And he said that, you know, he's partial to hanging. And we're going to play later. I normally don't poach parts of podcast episodes like this, but I think it's important to hear all of his comments in context. But again, before that, I want to read a couple other pieces here. For instance, David French, who was a colleague of Williamson's at the National Review, had a very straightforward remarks to make. He said, "The Atlantic has caved to the intolerant mob and fired Kevin Williamson, and in so doing has contributed to a slanderous fiction that Kevin is so beyond the pale that he has no place at one of the nation's premier mainstream publications. His millions of words, his countless interviews, and his personal character were reduced to nothing, inconsequential in the face of deleted tweets and a five-minute podcast dialogue." So what are the Atlantic's readers now missing? I ask you to read Kevin's February 18th, 2016, National Review cover story about the opioid crisis, and he lists several things, but he says, basically, Kevin is independent, he's provocative. Sure, he can troll a little bit, and no, I don't agree with everything he says. I'm a moderate, you see. If abortion is ever criminalized in this nation, I think only the abortionist and not the mother should face murder charges for poisoning, crushing, or dismembering a living child. So we might differ about the laws in a hypothetical future America. I didn't realize that made me moderate, but I agree with David French on that. However, I think, again, we're going to play the podcast. I think his position, Williamson's position, is more nuanced than what The Atlantic and also Media Matters and the left are portraying, as they badgered The Atlantic until they finally fired him. He says, "But in this America, the one we live in now, Kevin is one of our most interesting, talented voices, like every single interesting and talented person I know. He can provoke, but so what? Aren't we adults? Can't we handle disagreement?" Apparently not. And that's what it seems like. That's my concern, is that, you know, conservative voices are being pushed out of mainstream media. I think it's important. There's a place for right-leaning and left-leaning publications and libertarian-leaning publications. Caffeinatedthoughts.com, as well as this podcast, we proclaim, you know, we're Christian first, and then we're also conservative, and that's the point of view at least I try to come from. I'm obviously not a perfect person, and I don't always convey that very well, but that's my intent, and that's okay. But we're upfront about that. The Atlantic has been, while I think a lot of its writers are probably a little more left leaning, it still encompasses a wide political spectrum. French continues. He says, "After Kevin was fired, Guardian columnist Jessica Valenti tweeted that she was very relieved for the women who work at The Atlantic. What was Kevin going to do to them? Write things that made them angry? God forbid, his ideas might hurt? Have mercy." And so it goes, a steady and inexorable division of America into the tolerable and the intolerable. With the range of the tolerable people narrowing ever so rapidly, there's no grace in this brave new world. There's no charity. It's not enough to disagree. Now we must ruin. Now we must humiliate. Saying you're wrong is no longer enough. The argument isn't sufficient." I agree, and that's something. You know, there are a lot of pro-abortion writers I can't stand. I vehemently disagree with Rekha Basu on a whole host of issues. She's a columnist at the Des Moines Register. Never in my wildest dreams would I ever consider pushing the Des Moines Register to fire her because of her views. Because I believe her voice is just as important as mine in the marketplace of ideas, and I believe in free speech. Again, private organizations can hire and fire based on, however they want. Your ideology is not a protected class. It's important that we have a plethora of voices in the marketplace of ideas. So this firing is disappointing. I want to read another piece by, what's her name? Catherine Magnu Ward from Reason. She basically said, Williamson expressed the view that abortion is murder and should be punished to the full extent of the law, although he later indicated that he has mixed feelings about capital punishment. Again, we're going to play that podcast excerpt. I do not share his view, but by declaring Williamson to be outside the Overton window of acceptable political discourse because he believes strongly that abortion is a serious punishable crime, The Atlantic is essentially declaring that it cannot stomach real mainstream conservatism as it actually exists in the 21st century America. Williamson uses colorful and sometimes rash language. He didn't have to detail the grisly form of punishment he would inflict on women who decide to terminate their pregnancies. He chose to do so because he enjoys provoking a reaction. But The Atlantic knew that about him before it hired him. Now I want to take time to play this excerpt of this podcast. This is from Mad Dogs and Englishmen. It's a National Review podcast that was hosted at ricochet.com. This is with a conversation between Charles C.W. Cook and Kevin Williamson. So without further ado, here's the podcast excerpt.
Lena Dunham's very concerned about things like abortion and contraception. And someone challenged me on my views of abortion, you know, saying if you really thought it was a crime, you would support things like, life in prison, no parole, for treating it as a homicide. And I do support that. In fact, as I wrote, what I have in mind is hanging.
Well, let's come back to that, let's focus on that for a moment. Before we get on to that, the disagreement between us on this issue, it's worth saying that the presumption that you cannot believe something to be murder unless you agree with whatever response to that crime your interlocutor is proposing is ridiculous.
Sure.
The reality is that you can simultaneously believe that a crime is murder and that the person should be hanged, or that the person should be put in prison for 10 years, or that the person should be not put in prison at all but rehabilitated by their family, or that the person should go to a mental institution, or that the person should be sent to Australia or exiled onto an island just off of civilization's coast. You can believe all of these things. Now,
maybe not all at the same time.
No, of course not. Now, I presume that our friend was suggesting that unless one believes that the man convicted of first-degree murder and the doctor convicted of abortion are given the same punishment, then one can't possibly believe that they are the same crime. But again, that doesn't really make too much sense to me because, whether we like it or not, where society's heart is on a particular issue does govern the response of the state. There isn't much debate over the question of standard first-degree murder. We might disagree as to what you do about it within small parameters, but there are nonetheless few people who don't think it should be punished. But with abortion, much to my disappointment, being one of those people who does think that abortion is murder, most people in some form or another are okay with it.
Yeah.
And therefore you have a very different question, much in the same way as slavery was a problem when it was universally accepted for the William Wilberforces of the world, and he couldn't just turn around and say, I think this should be treated in the same way as, say, rape or assault was. That is a tricky question. It's such an asinine suggestion that unless you think that summarily the state should come in and start behaving toward abortion as it does to other forms of murder, then you don't believe that it's murder.
Right, yeah. So, we already have degrees of culpability and punishment, or other sorts of homicide cases. You know, we have, including some laws that I don't agree with, you know, like laws that enhance penalties for, you know, murder when it involves a government official or, police officer, something like that. You know, hate crimes laws, things like that. But we also make, you know, distinctions between certain kinds of murders in certain cases. The shockingness and the cruelty of the crime, it makes a difference. You know, two guys get in a fight in a bar, and one of them pulls out a gun and shoots the other. Is treated differently from some, you know, guy kidnaps a 90-year-old woman and tortures her.
Right, and, as it should be.
And murders, yeah. And that's okay. So, whereas you and I don't think agree quite on the underlying issue of abortion, at least, you know, the degree of criminality. I mean, I think we can agree on that, that there's certainly reasonable cases to be made for differentiating. You know, my broader point here is, of course, that I am, I'm kind of squishy on capital punishment in general, but that I'm absolutely willing to see abortion treated like a regular homicide under the criminal code. Sure.
Now, instantly.
What's that?
Instantly.
Sure.
As of tomorrow.
I would take it, yeah. I mean, now it's going to be 150 years before this happens. And as I've written a number of times before, I suspect we'll end up with a technical solution before we arrive at a moral one, simply that contraception will be so universal and so effective, probably within a few years, probably within a decade, that, you know, the problem will essentially go away.
Right, because it will be opt-in, as you put it, rather than opt-out.
In the in developed world, and probably the rest of the world as well. So, you know, as Michel Houellebecq wrote about the Buddha, the enlightened one, if he had meditated upon it, would not necessarily have rejected a technical solution.
Right.
So when I was talking about, I would totally go with treating like any other crime up to and including hanging, which kind of, you know, as I said, I'm kind of squishy about capital punishment in general, but I've got a soft spot for hanging as a form of capital punishment. I tend to think that things like lethal injection are a little too antiseptic.
Sure, you know, if you're going to do it.
Quasi-medical. Yeah, if the state's going to do violence, let's make it violence.
I absolutely agree.
Let's not pretend like we're doing something else. as I mentioned on Twitter, actually, I did have the weird experience once of having come upon someone who'd been hanged. I was living in Delhi at the time, and apparently there was some sort of, it was a Hindu-Muslim romance thing. And at the time, this is the 90s, and among, you know, particularly poor people in slums, that just still wasn't done. And I'm not sure if it had been a Hindu boy and a Muslim girl the other way around, but in fact, I never quite got that straight. But yeah, they hanged the poor kid. I think he was about maybe middle teens, seemed like something.
So, and acknowledging that you would immediately apply strong criminal sanctions to abortion, whereas, although I think it is flat-out murder, mm-hmm. I think you need to change more minds before you do that, or we'd have a situation similar to prohibition.
Oh yeah, well sure, as a practical matter, I don't disagree with you on any of that. I think in some ways it's worse than your typical murder. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, premeditated.
It's clinical. Literally.
Yes, it's something that's performed against the most vulnerable sort of people.
Right.
And that's something we generally take into, you know, account in sentencing in other murder cases. You know, murdering a 4-year-old kid is not the same as killing a 21-year-old guy.
No, and it's not just that it's treated differently within the criminal justice system, but society treats that differently.
Sure.
Listening to this podcast interview, I have to say I don't understand where Jeffrey Goldberg was coming from when he said this was callous and violent. These were two men reasoning together about a difficult subject. I you know, disagree that women should be the target of criminal sanctions if abortion is ever criminalized, and I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I've always believed abortionists should be the target of those criminal sanctions. I do believe abortion is murder. That's why I agree, and Williamson agreed actually, that reasonable people can view abortion as murder and see that, you know, have a variety of different responses to it. And I think that's reasonable. As a pro-life community, while Williamson's point of view is out there, I have no idea how mainstream it is or not. It is an internal conversation that's been had among the pro-life community, but it's one where basically his point of view has been tamped down as far as legislation is concerned, because again, pragmatically, it's not a political tenable position. It's not a culturally tenable position. We are not there as a society. Therefore, this is never going to happen. Now, I think Williamson's point that abortion 10 years down the road may be minimal because of birth control, that's something I've never really considered. You know, he may be right, he may be wrong about that. But looking at what The Atlantic did based on this podcast interview, I'm just absolutely perplexed. I think this is shocking. This is not, he was not being hateful toward women. I've received a lot of reaction from people on Twitter. One person said he advocates lynching women. No, he does not advocate lynching women. He actually says he's squeamish on capital punishment. Lynching is basically, you know, it's a mob action. It's hanging, stringing somebody up in a tree. He doesn't advocate that. This is capital punishment. This is the state after due process, after somebody goes on trial and they're found guilty by a jury of their peers, being sentenced that in a constitutionally appropriate way. That is totally different than a lynching. Somebody called this murder. Again, the state following due process, that is not murder. That's justice. Now, you might disagree with the sentence imposed, and I you know, don't think we should go there. I don't see us ever going there. But I think this was a definite overreaction from The Atlantic and the left, and their goal of having a diversity of voices in their publication was definitely hurt by this, and I think it's their readers were hurt by this decision. Anyway, hey, we've come to the end of the podcast. I want to thank you so much for listening. If you're listening to this podcast somewhere other than on caffeinatedthoughts.com, I encourage you to go to our website. Again, it's caffeinatedthoughts.com, or you can just Google it at Caffeinated Thoughts, and it'll show up at the top of the search page. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for our emails. We don't want you to miss a single update. Hey, this is Shane Vanderhart. Until next time, my friends, take care.